Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Forrest Stevens Show. It's been a long time since I've done one of these, so it feels strange again. But it's something I keep coming back to, and that's important to me. It's important to me because I feel like I want to have a voice and I want to have a place to say what I've been thinking about and what I've been experiencing, because I feel cathartic after publishing one of these and creating one of these. Publishing, not so much. Creating, definitely. But publishing does something too, because it shares it to you. And I find it interesting to have, even though it's a one-sided discussion, it still feels like this discussion is being put out into the ears of other people and creating new thoughts, hopefully. And inevitably, because when you are stimulated by something, it creates a reaction in your brain. We are constantly stimulated by things throughout this day and age and in our lives. You know, even when you go outside, you see a bird fly past. That is stimulating your mind. And it takes experiences, it takes having experiences to create in this world. You cannot start from nothing. You cannot be locked in a room to begin with. I mean, what would a human's mind be like if we were locked in a room with zero stimulation and somehow kept alive? You know, Matrix style, in a pod even, eyes closed, being fed nutrients, but having no sensation of what that feeding is, no sensation of what life is. Totally comatose from day one. What would that person be like if they woke up from that? If it was some sort of sleep, or if it was a room that the door was open to and you had no idea there was a door there, you don't have any concept of a door, you have no concept of what life is when you wake up. Your mind, what would your mind be like? Would your mind be able to comprehend things? Would your eyes be able to see them? So, stimulation and absorption of life is what creates life. That is all life is. And depending on where you're born, who you are, what year it is that you live in, your experiences are basically forced upon you. We can make small decisions, you know. Do I work at this place? Do I work at that place? Do I live at this place? Do I live at that place? Do I decide to move? Do I decide to stay? And these things have huge impacts for the entire rest of your life. You're literally opening a door and you're shutting another door. Now that door might, there might be another door that you reach that leads you to that exact same position, but you've gotten there a different way and therefore had different experiences. Life is experiences. Life is entirely experiences. And I think that there's a lot of things in this world that prey on our unconsciousness. It preys on forcing experiences upon you, as opposed to you choosing those experiences. I've talked about this before, but I will expand on it, and I will also talk about a different subject on this. But basically, an algorithm of a social media forces experiences upon you. It shows you things that will work for you, will itch some unconscious thing so that you provide attention on what it has shown you, whether that's a video, whether that's audio, whether that's text that you're reading, pictures, whatever. It is giving you something with the hopes that you spend more than a millisecond on it, more than just scrolling past it. And a lot of those things that And there's this other example too, that there seems to be a lot of issues in this world. But there might not be issues in your life. And that is a very, very interesting thing. I think when there's issues with your life, you actually don't care as much and therefore aren't fed the information as much. You don't have the opportunity to absorb the information of the issues of the world. If you are struggling, if you are working to survive in a very true essence, I don't mean you're showing up at a job, although it could look like this. You're showing up at a job and waiting till the end of the month till you get a paycheck to pay off a rolling debt that you just already spent more money than. That can be, in a sense, working to survive, but I mean more of a day-to-day fighting to live, fighting to eat, fighting to breathe. And it doesn't mean this crazy, insane world of poverty necessarily, but it means focusing on the moment around you, because and you don't actually have the time or ability to focus on broader issues. There are a lot of issues of the world that act like a social media in the way that they want your attention. And some of these issues don't really exist. They're very, very small issues, but they're blown into big ones by people riding the wave of attention that they can get for talking about those issues. This is basically what politicians do. This is what activists do. And I'm not saying there's no merit to any of the issues that any of those people bring up. But what I'm saying is they are fighting for your attention on that issue so that you spend your issue-solving energy on them and their focus and their what they think is important or what they are using to prop themselves up. And there is a lot of that. And in my opinion, that's 99% of politicians. It's not an 80-20 rule like there is in a lot of things in the world. There's not 20% of politicians really doing things for other people. It's a 99% rule that 99% of them, in my opinion, are primarily, and this kind of destroys anything good that they might do, but primarily they are focused on improving their own well-being. And why not? Because that doesn't end at politicians. I would say a lot of people are like that too. And why shouldn't they be? Their existence is their own, and it's their experience and their of life is completely their own. And that makes them completely alone in this world. We cannot know how somebody else truly feels. We have to believe them. We have to have faith that when somebody tells us who they are, or shows us who they are, or tells us anything, that they are saying what is true to them. And we have to believe it. We have to have faith. And that's why people lie, because they are able to, because they are able to convince people that they are not lying. And that's basically all politicians I've seen have done. They've lied. They've lied. And I don't have any faith in them. I don't have any faith in them. They've completely destroyed my faith. And it's not because of any single one of them. It's not because, oh, I hate Trump, or, oh, the Biden crime family, or, oh, fuck Trudeau, oh, stop Harper. It's because of the system that they exist in. And it's the system we all exist in, which is capitalism. And I'm not saying that any other system is going to work better, because capitalism is ultimately what every society has worked towards, and it continues to work towards. There was capitalism in ancient Rome. There was capitalism that led Europeans to travel to North America for the first time. There was capitalism that every single war is fought on. It's not some just thing that you have no reason to invade and steal something from somebody else. There's no reason to do that. There's no reason to create a gang of violent criminals to invade neighboring lands, but capitalism. And what is capitalism? Capitalism is the belief that there is stored value and that some people have more of it. And is that belief not warranted? Maybe those people do have more resources inherited to them, more resources given to them for what they've done. Even people can become independently wealthy. It's not all inherited. But why is the reason that they've become independently wealthy is because they have convinced more people to give them more capital for what they do or what they have provided. We live in a capitalistic world, and the other part of that is influence. The reason I don't believe in the political system is because we all pretend that one vote, that we are all equal because we all have one vote. That's just not how the system has worked ever, and therefore it does not work in that way. There is not some miracle that makes this system function equally, because it's never happened. I don't see a voting system, a giant political system, not be completely torn apart by the use of capital. False narratives, false information, the war games of advertising and the war games of elections. It is extremely valuable for an individual to become elected into a political situation because it gives them power. And it is a war. Politicians are fighting each other for those seats. If you run in Canada here as an MP and you don't get in this jurisdiction, you get in your car and you drive to the next town and you say, hey, do you need a politician like me in your party? Because I ran here and lost, but if I run here, I might win. And there's a ton of other politicians driving to that same town and politicians rising in those ranks saying, hey, can I have some power, please? Can I have some capital? And they're all asking for capital. And who has capital but giant corporations, capitalists, people who have been extremely successful in a capitalist society? They hold the most weight in what happens in their region, whether it's the United States, a certain state, a certain town, a different country. They hold more weight than the next person beside them. If they have more money and they have more things that they want. Companies are not giving politicians money through lobbying because it's a charitable idea. It's because they're saying this is an investment in the way that I want my business world to be. They're saying, if I give this person this much money and this person this much money, what is my return on investment? Will I be able to do X, Y, and Z that I'm not able to do now? Or will I be able to continue doing what I'm doing now that a different politician will say no to? It's all a big game based on capitalism. And that's why money is a lot more important than I think a lot of people give it credit to. There's a lot of people in this world that just spend their money. They buy drinks, they buy snacks, they buy things, they buy $600 jackets instead of $100 jackets. They buy bottle service, a really old bottle of wine for 10 grand. They rent a suite instead of a room. They go beyond the necessary because Why not? Because they don't have the value. They don't understand the value of their dollar. That's basically it. It all comes down to that. There's a lot of people that do not understand the value of the money that they hold or don't hold. And that's a large failing in this society. I mean, we live in a capitalist world, and we will continue to. Why are we not learning as individuals, and as, you know, there's a system of teaching in this world called public education and all education for that matter. Why are they not teaching about the system that we live in? The system that dictates everything else, basically, that goes on in this world. The only reason you can live in the house that you are in right now listening to this, the only reason that you're driving the car that you are listening to this in, the only reason you're doing anything that you're doing in this world right now is because of the capitalist society we live in. And it's very skewed, and it's getting more skewed. And that's going to be an issue that people will talk about to gain influence and attention on that specific issue. But there's a lot of issues in this world that are problematic. But I would say that is the root of them, is that capitalism has been unfair for too long to too many people. Now, does that mean that we all have to unionize, that we all need to band together, that we need to become, we need to start spitting Karl Marx and become communisms, become communists? I don't know. I don't know, because that just seems like another political movement. That seems like another opportunity for shysters. I think we need to band together as individuals and find other individuals that we trust truly. And I don't think that we should trust people that we don't really know, and people that are, that ever lie. You know, if somebody lies once about something, it means they could lie about other things too. And have those people actually changed? And are they actually relevant to your life? Like, I'm not talking about people. I mean, that's the craziest thing to me in the world is celebrity culture and influencer culture. Well, I mean, influencers are just celebrities now, but celebrity culture in general. It is so insane to me to care about what somebody else is doing that you've never met in your life and that you will never meet in your life. And if you did meet in your life, they would sign an autograph for you, say, hey, nice to meet you, thanks, goodbye, and leave and not give a second thought to who you are as an individual. That is insane. Why put your attention into anyone that does not affect your life? Now, there's argument that the whatever their creation is or whatever they do has some effect on your life, but it's important to evaluate that relationship. I think there's a very parasitic relationship, parasocial relationship that we have with celebrities as individuals, and that strips our attention. And why is it so bad to have our attention stripped away from what's actually in front of us in our life? Is because attention is all we have. Attention is time and energy and life force. It is your life force being stripped away. And your life force is very important. And I think that too much of our time is spent on things that are not important. So what is important? You know, I've talked about us living in a capitalistic world and that being something that is basically here to stay. So is that important? Is it important to accumulate capital to become someone with more power, more energy, more influence, more ability? I think that depends. I don't think that's the worst thing that you could do in your life, actually. I think the worst thing you could do is throw all your capital and energy away to people that are willingly and actually kind of maliciously taking it from you, creating situations where that's their goal. I think it's important to live a life that is important to you. And I think that it's our unconscious selves that that allow ourselves to get our energy stolen. I think if you're conscious, you want to do something with your life. I think if you're conscious, you have goals. And sometimes I think it's really important to look at our goals and think about actually how much money that they actually require and how much capital in this world. Do they require anyone else's help? Well, then they require capital. And to think about your capital, the best way to make money, to start making money, is to continue doing what you're doing, but to change your spending habits and to actually save that money. And with that saved money, invest it in making money. Now, does that mean getting a 7% annualized averaged out return in an S&P 500 index? Or does that mean investing in education? Does that mean investing in a business that could earn you a lot more than that 7%? Possibly. For me, I don't know what it is for you. For me, it is those things. It is a mix of different risk strategies for earning additional income. And a lot of those things take energy and time from yourself and not money to influence others. But money is a store of energy. And I've talked about this in my last episode, which got into what Bitcoin was and what the idea of money is to begin with. So capitalism, it's the world we live in. It's something we need to accept. Money is a store of value. It's something we need to accept. I think the reason that I say that is because in the past, I have not accepted those things. In the past, I've thought deeply and longed and tried in different ways to subsist without money, with less money, and not giving it the true value that it has. And when I talk about money, I think maybe it's better to talk about assets and valuable things. And that's what assets are. Assets are valuable things, brother. And I think that the reason I make that distinction is because money is not a good store of value. There's guaranteed inflation against it every single year. Why would you hold on to something that is literally disappearing? And I think that's the reason that we have the system we currently have, is because that's very enticing to get people to spend it, saying, oh, my $100 is worth $100 now, but in a year it's worth $98 or $95 or $90. I would say about $93 actually. There's probably about 7% inflation realistically. When you actually look at real inflation, not these fucking cooked up numbers that they decide interest rates on. So, you know, different things have different rates of inflation or deflation. Different things appreciate in value because of inflation. I mean, that's assets like stocks and real estate will actually go up as inflation goes up to match that. Your job is supposed to do that by raising, you know, by giving you raises. The world is supposed to keep up with inflation, but that's dumb. Why would inflation exist if the world was supposed to keep up with inflation? Why wouldn't it just be equal? Why wouldn't they just say, hey, there's no more inflation? We're not going to print money in that way. We're not going to create debt. Well, that's not the way the world works. And there's obviously going to be more inflation than there is deflation constantly. So that is another reason that capitalism is so broke, is because it, no matter what, is pulling money away from people who have and hold cash, and people who are not asset owning and part of the asset owning class of capitalists. You know, somebody who owns a factory, successful factory, even somebody that owns a home, somebody that has a retirement account with assets and bonds and all these things are not as affected by inflation as somebody living paycheck to paycheck who doesn't have any debt, doesn't have any asset earning debt. You know, there's this crazy thing. I mean, Yeah, interest rates as they raise, they do affect asset holders because asset holders will often leverage themselves into debt and use that debt to further earn income. So that puts strain on those people, but it's only people who have over-leveraged themselves who will be affected. It's only companies that are over-leveraged that will be affected, or they'll be affected the greatest. And the people who are under-leveraged, people who have more cash on hand or less debt and more lending ability or more access to debt, they will actually be able to scoop up assets at an even cheaper price as they become on sale because they have been over leveraged and they can buy that debt up at higher interest rates. It's basically a big fucking pyramid of very uneasy posts and beams. Very, very weak, very bendy. There's a lot of cracks in the foundation. There's a lot of gusts of wind knocking them over. And there's a lot of basically people, organizations, people, individuals putting up another beam and saying, "Hey, look at what I built. Now pay me for it. Pay me for being a part of this system, for contributing to this shaky, shaky house of cards." Which is a show I've never watched, by the way. And now I'm not allowed to because the lead actor's been disgraced and canceled. No, of course I'm allowed to, but I don't know if it needs my attention. If my attention is better spent somewhere else, possibly. So, that being said, there are a lot of people out there in this world who will want attention from you. It's not just social media algorithms. It's not just TV shows and movies. It's not just politicians. It's people who will hire you for things. And recently, I got hired to do some to do a job in my field of expertise, which is documentary filmmaking. And that's probably about as much as in depth of what I can get into about what this project was, because I signed an NDA. But these people basically wanted my energy, my time, and didn't want to pay me for it. They wanted me to be down for their cause, and more than was what was deserved, basically. Completely just a horrible experience. I'll say that. I'll say that as my personal experience. I'm not saying anything more about the qualities of this company or this organization, I should say. But for me, it was a horrible experience that left me feeling defeated, left me feeling horrible. Because of it was a horrible experience. I basically had to sever myself from the project, and they felt extremely betrayed by that. They took it extremely personal, and the last thing that the person said to me, and this will be the last thing that they ever say to me because I will never be talking to them again. This is how terrible this situation really was. What they said to me after me giving up an entire month of my life and overworking for them completely on a trip, and giving multiple months of thought and preparation and work behind the scenes, a lot of my energy and time. The last thing this person said to me, the leader of this organization, said, "Thanks for nothing." And I mean, that's a testament to how, I guess, hurt they were by my actions of saying you need to find somebody else to finish this job, which is all I said, basically. There's more words than that, but that's what I was requesting, was I have done this amount of work. And you will have to find somebody else to do the rest of this work. and use the money you haven't paid me to do that and to hire someone else. I was quitting. That's what I was doing. And I was doing it in a way that was very reasonable, in my opinion. So I felt very, very hurt by that. Thanks for nothing. And all the other sentiment that went around with me parting ways with this organization. It was a huge time commitment. It was a huge distance away from my business and my company. And it was a lot of basically empty promises I feel very horrible about the whole experience. I mean, how many times can I use that adjective? The reason I get to this is because we're all worth whatever we decide to price ourselves at. And that worth is only really actualized if somebody else, some capitalist, is willing to provide you that capital at that rate that you believe you're worth at. And we can all upgrade our skills to be worth more, or, you know, there's different ways to be worth more in this world. But you're only worth what somebody else, your actualized worth is only what you can find someone else to pay you at. And that's the only actualized worth of a product or service or item or anything out there in this world, is what somebody is willing to actually trade for with dollars. Dollars is just a denomination of value. And it can be compared directly with any other thing, or indirectly as well. So what's interesting about that to me is understanding your value of your time. And there are a lot of things that are valuable that are not monetarily instantly. And I think that's another thing that people have to think about when evaluating their worth. I mean, there's a lot of interns who will intern at a certain company because it's an investment into their future, even though they're not earning as much as they could or possibly even anything, because they want to work themselves up into that specific company, gain experiences in that specific skill so that they could work at a different company. There is value to that. And that was part of the value that I was hoping to extract from this project that I did. But I guarantee this company will shelf my project because of how they organize their organization. And you can take from that what you will. It's terrible to have come from that. And I feel very, like I said, I feel very defeated. It's very interesting when you feel defeated in this world. I think there's a lot of people in this world that feel defeated regularly. They don't feel like they are winning life. And I think it's very important in your day-to-day to do something that you feel like you can win. I think that's why some people will become obsessed with video games, and they'll even play it on modes or that aren't as hard, or they prefer playing it on modes that aren't as hard as it could be because they want to win. People want to win, and it feels good to win, and it feels bad to lose. It feels bad to be a loser, baby. And I think that some wins intrinsically we understand have more value to us than, and also some losses have more impact, right? You could drop your bagel on the floor and that would be a loss. Or you could have a project, multi-month, possibly even year project, blow up and become absolutely nothing. And that could be a loss. Now, those losses are not the same. And So how do you get you need to have an equal win to start feeling better about yourself, because it's a crush to your confidence. And for me, it's really making me want to have wins in other sectors. It's making me want to even move away from filmmaking just because of how big of a loss it felt to me. I haven't had a loss like this in my career. I've been fairly successful, and it's taken a long time, and there's been a lot of little wins, but there hasn't been a lot of, and there's been a lot of little losses as well. But there hasn't been a lot of big losses in my filmmaking business and career. I've done fairly well. It's unfortunate. And I, you know, and there are other l little losses that speak out to me as well in this business. But overall, I've been fairly successful at actually completing my projects that I stick my mind to, and that comes down to power and the way that I've built my business. I am the person who is in power in my business, and I have worked for other people, and sometimes those are, you know, that time is successful, and sometimes it's not as successful. But whenever I'm in charge, I find that my losses are very small if they exist at all. So that's what I've tried to do, is I've tried to put myself in power, in my business, and that's why I've never gave any control, any ownership over to anyone else. Not really. I mean, I partner with my partner Emily. And she does a lot of the work now, and she actually is, you know, technically part owner, but that's a partnership, and she's a part owner of everything in my life, and I'm a part owner of everything in her life because we are engaged to be married. And that works for me. That feels okay because I know that she'll never try to take control. But when I've worked with other people, they are ultimately paying me fixed income to create something, and that mutual cooperative environment is skewed. And like I said, these people will probably shelf this project that I've spent a ton of my time on, and a lot of that value from that project was the actual creation of it, not the money that they paid me for it. The money they paid me for it was, in my eyes, actually very low for the amount of work that I did. And I will stand by that. They will definitely argue opposite because that is who they are. And you can take from that what you will. So on that note, you know, I really need to do something that I feel like is a win for me. And I'm not sure what that is for me right now. And that's tough. I have felt down ever since that loss. And I have been hoisted into this very busy environment currently because I'm moving in a month or so. And there's a lot of work to be done. And that amount of work is overwhelming. If I was in a confident mindset, and it is absolutely very difficult to deal with in this underlying confidence blown loss stage that I'm feeling right now. I think you know, I will get over it just with time. I have gotten over it in part with time. I'm a lot less emotionally attached to the experience that happened to me, which is good. You know, time heals all wounds, as they say. There's some processing, there's lots of processing that still needs to happen. There's processing that happens daily about it. And it's not the first time I've dealt with loss. It's just a different type of loss. And yeah, it was eye-opening. It was eye-opening to understand a little bit more about what this industry is like, and the reason why I have kept my distance from the filmmaking industry, because it requires so much okay and so much cooperation and collaboration with other people. I like a certain amount of collaboration, and the reason I like that is because people are amazing. People are great to work with. And I should have known that I shouldn't have worked with these people. But how was I supposed to know? I was going out on a limb because of how cool the project sounded. And now I'm out on that limb. I got that limb chopped off. I'm falling from that tree because I was out on the limb. And hopefully I build myself a parachute as I fall, or hopefully I land on something soft. And, you know, we're all hoping for a soft landing individually and as the US economy is too. That we're hoping for a soft landing. So this being the Money Monday episode, I like to do an episode every week that is about money in some ways. I'm going to also talk about what I believe to be happening in the stock market. We just got out of the most recession talk, most bearish camp that I have ever experienced as an investor. Now, that's not saying much because I haven't been an investor all that long. But I think with the world that we live in today, with the rapid communication, with the ability for everyone that has a dollar invested to be following some economic guru online on YouTube, watching André Gide talk about the most general BS ever about the economy, or Graham Stephan, or whoever else is the big influencer du jour for the economy. We've gotten a lot of information that is saying, oh, a recession is looming, oh, the yield curve, blah, 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 you know, higher interest rates. We've never gone from avoiding a recession, boom, to this huge exuberance on investing, where we have almost reached those all-time highs that we had in 2020, or 2021, or whatever it was, you know, basically before 2022. I'm not sure exactly when the all-time high was, and you know, it all depends on the index you look at, but basically we're talking NASDAQ, S&P. And the reason we're hitting those is because of a smaller sect of larger cap companies that are involved in artificial intelligence in some way. Now, what this looks like to me is the ultimate bull trap. And the reason for that is because sentiment is changing. People are starting to not talk about a recession. And that's what needs to happen for people to get dumped on, and for hedge funds and giant companies and investors of all kinds to make a huge amount of money. And to, you know, they want these, basically, to make a lot of money and to be an intelligent, really intelligent investor, you want big, volatile ups and downs. That's how you make a ton of money. But you have to be aware of when those ups and downs are happening. So you have to have your finger on the pulse. You have to be priced in. You have to be priced in immediately. And you have to be priced in at the right time. I mean, there's this thing that happens where people talk about this quote that is, it is better to have time in the market than it is better to time the market. And that is just absolute horse shit. I mean, it's the most general advice ever. That's for somebody who does not want to think about money ever, but wants to have money when they're older. Yes, it is fine. It is a fine strategy to have time in the market. And in fact, overall, that will raise your odds of making money. But timing the market, to some degree, makes a massive difference. If you buy at the top of a bubble in a certain asset class, you have a lot of time in the market until you get back to that all-time high. And that entire time, you are losing. And I don't just mean losing these dollars that are not actualized. I mean losing the opportunity cost. Your opportunity cost is huge. If you have an investment that you have to hold on for 20 years to get back to that same value, the entire time inflation is eating away at that value, because of course that asset is going to hit that value again if it's a solid long-term asset. But that amount of money's actual true value has gone down because of 7% inflation every single year to the real dollar. And that entire time, that money has been locked up in that asset that is only going to break even way down the road. And all that time, there has been depressed asset class that if you had capital, and that's that opportunity cost that I'm talking about, if you had capital, you could invest it at that time and actually ride the wave back up. There's these. That's a reason technical analysts like actually make money, and so do fundamental analysts and investors. But the reason technical analysis investors can actually make money as well is because there is a true up and down swing to the stock market consistently. Now, can you predict that? Is it always going to be going up, then down, then up, then down? You don't know when it's actually going to swing, and some people have different ideas and different patterns and can maybe up their percentage of knowing, but nobody knows for certain. If you did, you would just become the richest person in the world. But nobody knows for certain because the future is uncertain. And the stock market, people talk about it always being priced in, but how is that possible when the future is uncertain? But you have to be quick and you have to take chances and you have to take risk to be somebody who times the market. So, what is that? What can we do with that? Well, we can understand that basically inflation is always going to raise certain asset classes, and that good companies are good, and that bad companies are bad, and that some bad companies become good. But how are you going to know that? How are you going to figure that out? That takes a lot of researching and a lot of luck and a lot of risk. And maybe that's in your risk tolerance, maybe it's not. But I would say, as a general rule, and I'm starting to sound like Andre Jacques here, but as a general rule, you want to avoid penny stocks. You want to avoid companies that have high debt and low cash flow. You want to invest in good companies at good prices. That's the ultimate rule of investing. That's why I would say Warren Buffett is the biggest investor, the most profitable long-term investor, is because that's his philosophy as well, is to invest in good companies at good prices. Now, what are good companies? Well, they're going to have the ability to make money into the future. What are good assets? The ability to be worth something in the future. That's why I think actually commodities are very interesting. If you and then finding good companies that are correlated to those commodities, as opposed to actually trading on the futures themselves, I think is a very interesting route to go as an investor, because commodities are something that we're going to need into the future. Now, there is always threat from the outside, from competition when you're investing in a company. So maybe it's better to diversify within a sector. There's also threat of those commodities being not as used in the future, depending on where technology goes. And what I'm basically saying is there's always threat and there's always risk when you invest your money. There's always risk when you invest your money in yourself. There's always risk when you invest your money in the stock market. But what I'm seeing in the stock market right now is we are in this massive bull trap, and that, yeah, prices are going to keep going up and for an undetermined amount of time. I don't know when that is going to switch. Is it better to get in on this window? Is it better to be part of the inflation of this bubble? Yes, if you take profits. And I mean profits. I mean cash. I mean taking your profits and saying, hey, it's gone up even further. I could have made even more money, but I just made some money. And I did that on Ford. You know, I bought Ford at 1188, and I allowed myself, I sold an in the money call option after selling call options and lowering my cost basis from 1188 to, I believe, 1144 by selling call options on it over a couple of months, short-term call options. I lowered my cost basis to 1144, I believe. I don't have my spreadsheet up right now, but I sold an in-the-money call option recently for $14, and it got assigned at 1404. So, whatever. I made pretty good money on that with $1,000, or 1188 invested. I made around $230 over a couple month period. That's a pretty great return. That's probably 16-18% a couple months. I believe it was about 2 months. But Ford stock price, it's above $15 now. So there's a $1 unrealized gains that because I got assigned, I lost out on that. But guess what? I don't think Ford is going to keep their price up high. There's a lot of hype on partnering with Tesla for the charging station, the Ford Lightning F-150. I think Ford could be a good company in the long term. But I took my profits and I took that money and I decided to put it elsewhere where I believe it's less risky. And that's because I believe that we are in an asset bubble right now, largely driven by hype, as any bubble is. And I think the next innovation in AI is further down the road than people think it is. And I think that the companies that are going to profit from this, the profits are further down than people think it is. And money will come out of those assets because of that. And that lowers the price of those assets. And when that lowers to a degree that I think is appropriate, I will be investing in some very good companies at lower prices. Right now, I will just go over a little bit of my stock holdings. I own 100 shares of SLV. That is a ETF that holds silver bullion. And so basically it's paper silver that I can trade in and out of very easily without huge bid and ask prices like physical silver has. And the other thing I can do on this paper silver is I can sell covered calls on it. That's why I own 100 shares. And that's a big investment for me, 100 shares of that. That's roughly $2,000 USD for 100 shares of that. But I can sell call options on it and lower my cost basis while I wait for that asset to appreciate. And I believe it will, because of the technology that we are getting into requires more and more silver. And silver is not being mined at a rate that it is being used. And so a lot of stockpiles are, there's pressure on that. And when there's pressure on that, that means that the companies are willing to buy at higher prices, raising the price of the silver itself, raising the price of the ETF that is correlated to the silver price. So that's my thesis on that. And I believe it's a long-term, very long-term play for a lot of money. And that's why I've invested a significant amount in that. A loser that I have in my stock portfolio that I've talked about before is KHC, Kraft Heinz. It is down about 8% in my portfolio. And that's because a well-paying dividend stock, a consumer staple that is a little, has pricing power, has the ability to hedge against inflation because of that pricing power. That's not as valuable in a world where growth companies, stock companies, sorry, AI companies, tech companies are rocketing because of AI hype. It is better to take money out of Kraft Heinz and put it into Nvidia, Apple, Tesla. At least that's in the eyes of investors that believe in the profits that will not happen for a while in my eyes. So Kraft Heinz is actually going on sale and I'm not selling it. I'm holding it. I got a nice dividend from it, $13 for the amount that I hold. It's about $1,000 worth. And I'm actually going to possibly, I don't like being so centralized in that one stock, but possibly investing more in the consumer staples index ETF, or something like SCHD, which is 100 dividend paying diversified companies in the Dow Jones, excluding REITs. And I think that's an interesting play for a more defensive ETF as well. What is some else that I got? I got a couple. So I am riding that AI hype a little bit in the form of Palantir. I own 100 shares of that. I'm selling covered calls on it. It's so volatile. I'm up. It fluctuates so much, but currently I'm up 15% on the stock itself, and it's been over 20% up. It's been 10% up. It's been 0% up when I bought it. But I'm selling cover calls on that and earning very, very good premium because of that volatility. But I'm selling it way out of the money, which is nice that there's the option for that because of how volatile it is. And I haven't been assigned, and I'm just earning that premium, lowering that cost basis even more than that 15% up that I have on Palantir. Now, Palantir is a long-term play for me as well because I actually believe in the company. And that's the way to do covered call strategy, in my opinion, investing, is to actually buy assets that you believe in. Now, I have, to counteract that a little bit, I own 100 shares of Nikola, which is basically a fraudulent they've lied publicly and actually paid a fine because of it about their semi truck that they have. But they're an electric semi truck company. They also provide charging infrastructure as well, and they just caught a bid on the whole kind of EV AI small cap stock thing. So they're up 30% in my portfolio, and I'm selling covered calls on those. And I've, you know, they're, it's a cheap stock. It's like a dollar something, $1.30, I believe. Now I bought it roughly a dollar, and you can actually sell, which is crazy, on one contract, even with commissions of being a dollar buying, a dollar selling, for covered call strategy. Even with those commissions, you can actually sell covered calls on a stock that only costs you about $100 and somewhat for 100 shares of them, and actually earn profits from selling covered calls on those. So that's another thing that I'm doing. And yeah, you know, there's a few other things, but yeah, I'm definitely big into the covered call strategy. The reason I like that is because you're basically hedging with it. You're buying an oversized long position and believing in that company long term, but you have a short-term short position on it that is smaller, significantly smaller, but you are earning money if that stock goes sideways to expiration or if it goes down. So you're basically betting against that long position that you have, which that combination makes it so that stock is less volatile, so you're actually earning income from that stock, which is nice on something like SLV because it doesn't pay a dividend. You're actually earning income through selling that premium, through selling that covered call. It's an amazing strategy, and it's what institutions do, and it's what drives up a lot of these stocks. If you don't understand options and you're investing and you're trading, you are causing yourself a disservice, because when somebody buys a call option, somebody has to provide the underlying 100 shares. And what does buying 100 shares of a company do? It raises the price of that stock. So when there's a huge amount of call options being bought, there's a huge amount of stock being bought. And that raises the prices more and more and more and more. So you're actually doing a lot more to the stock price by buying a call option. You're doing 100 times more, actually, buying one call option than you are buying one share of that stock, which is very interesting to understand that. So understanding call option demand and even put option demand will kind of make you realize what positions are being held on these stocks. Yeah, so that's a bit about Money Mondays here on the Forrest Stevens Show. I know I got a little personal there as well about some of my my trials and tribulations in my life. It's been cathartic for me. It's been helpful for me to talk about it, even though I'm just in a room by myself with a microphone. I find it helpful because I need to share. I need to get it out, because inside it's painful, but outside it becomes a little less painful when I've created something else with it. And that's why talk therapy is good, brother. And it's that is even better than talking about it alone to a microphone. Yeah, I hope to, of course, I say this every time, I hope to provide something of value to you. I hope that you have enjoyed this episode. And there will be some updates coming soon. One update I will just let you know ahead of time to build up maybe a little bit of hype, a little bit of attention, a little bit of interest, a little bit of intrigue, is I have finished editing a book. I've written a book. It's called Tripping. And it is a very interesting book that I will get more into different time. Perhaps when it's published and when I have a physical copy of it. So perhaps down the line a bit, by this fall, maybe it'll be a little Christmas present for somebody you know. I hope to have published it last year, but it looks like it's going to happen this year. And so that's just a little tease of what's to come. I've talked about it before, but now I've actually edited it. It's actually finished. Now I just need to go through the publishing process. So that's quite amazing. I'm quite happy about that. That was one good thing about the trip that I went on, was it gave me time to edit that. A little bit of time, which actually didn't take that long. I just needed to actually put my attention and focus on it. It took about 2 hours. So goes to show, when your attention is spread out, when you are unaware of the things that will provide the most value to you, that you will make poor decisions with your time and your energy. So think about that. Put some energy in some good places today. Hope that this inspired you to do so. And thanks everyone for listening.